non-alcoholic beverage products. There's more news at usaradio.com. Dennis Martin reporting, USA Radio Network News.
I've got a pop quiz for you. How well can you do? What's the last magazine you bought at the checkout line? What's the last book your kid checked out of the library? Who did your basketball team pick in the draft? Who did your kid pick to sit next to in lunch? Name a book on the bestseller list. Name a book in your kid's backpack. Who is president of the United States? Who is president of your kid's student council? Can you name three R&B artists? Can you name three artists your kid studied in school?
Know what really matters. When you know all about your kid's school, you know all about your kid. Not only will your relationship benefit, so will your kid. When kids have parents involved in their school, they have higher grades, better attendance, and more self-esteem. Visit www.pta.org to find 100 simple ways to get involved. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Thank you for listening to the TalkStar Radio Network. For the finest and informative and interactive talk radio programming, it's the TalkStar Radio Network, available live via your local radio station and on the Internet at TalkStarRadio.com. Your feedback is important to us. Email us at TalkStarRadio.com.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I want to talk this hour about the avian flu, a possibly quite virulent flu that right now is being spread from bird to bird, and occasionally from bird to people in Asia, and more recently in Europe and in Russia. Now, the flu, the kind of flu that we get every year, does kill, you know, several hundred, sometimes several thousand people a year. But a flu can be much more serious. The most famous recent pandemic, which is an epidemic that is much more widespread throughout the world, occurred in 1918 following the trench warfare of World War I. And that illness, the influenza outbreak of 1918, killed from 20 to 50 million people. Now, the World Health Organization of the United Nations and the Center for Disease Control in the United States have predicted that the avian flu could kill from up to, some say 5 million, say some say 150 million people worldwide. But a number of others say, you know, that's a lot of scare tactics, that it's very hard for a flu to mutate from a bird to a human being. And in fact, that in World War I, there were certain conditions that made it much more easy to transmit such a virulent disease. In 1918, you had people in trench warfare. You had people that were extremely sick, lying ill next to healthy people, which allowed the disease to spread. It's interesting. One of the things that prevents diseases from spreading, in fact, is that there's a natural trade-off, scientists will tell you, between the virulence of a drug, how dangerous, the virulence of a disease, how dangerous a disease is, and its mobility. If you have an extremely dangerous disease, then likely it will get someone and they'll be knocked out, and they can't transmit the disease to others. So we find that the diseases that are more easily transmitted, things like colds, aren't that dangerous because, yes, you do go out. You know you do when you have a cold and you sneeze and you shake other people's hands and the cold passes that way. Whereas if the cold really knocked you out and killed you, you wouldn't be spreading the disease. So some argue that it's unlikely to have a 1918-like influenza outbreak like we had following World War I because that was a rare circumstance where the diseased were right there next to the healthy. But there are a number of diseases out there. SARS, there was a scare. It didn't go anywhere. But AIDS, for example, we do know is one of those diseases that has a very long incubation time. So healthy people were out there spreading the disease through sexual contact. And AIDS, of course, that epidemic was quite severe. So what is the danger of the avian flu? Coming up after the break, I have as my guest Dr. Gil Smolin. He's a clinical professor at the University of California Medical School in San Francisco and the author of a book about a dangerous infectious disease. It's called The Reign of the Rat. It's a medical thriller, and he'll be on right after the break. But as always on The Inside Scoop, there's always some politics involved. And the question is this administration prepared for the possibility of a pandemic? Not necessarily just the avian flu, but another kind. And it all comes down to the availability of drugs to treat the disease. The Swiss pharmaceutical company Roche has a patent on a medicine that is considered the most likely to be able to treat the avian flu, and it's called Tamiflu. And no, of course, this administration hasn't done enough to protect us, to buy up supplies in case of an outbreak. So the question comes, can we break the company's patent in a health emergency? Well, you would think you could, that if it comes to millions of lives versus a patent, we understand the patent protects the pharmaceutical company's profits, but when it comes to the danger of even just, say, tens of thousands of American lives, you would think that tens of thousands of lives would outweigh the patent. And Chuck Schumer, in fact, Senator Schumer, has threatened Roche that if they aren't willing to supply the drug to the United States within a month, he's going to file a bill to make them do so. But the Bush administration disagrees. They think that, in fact, the patent needs to be protected even in the case of severe diseases. And a lot of this comes out of, frankly, the AIDS debate. A lot of AIDS advocates thought that when massive amounts of people are dying, that sometimes you have to sacrifice drug profits in order to save lives. The Bush administration has taken a very strong stand on this before the World Trade Organization. They're one of the few countries that believes, no, the patent has to stay even in cases of emergency public health situations. So it'll be interesting to see the politics of it as well as the general question, should we be afraid? Should we be concerned? I, as you can imagine, do support Chuck Schumer. I think he's absolutely right that if Roche will not share, that he should file a bill a month from now to make them share with public health authorities enough vaccine to protect us all. But it'll be an interesting political battle. One of the interesting things, of course, is that the threat to the pharmaceutical company has already gotten them to come around a bit. I read an article in the Washington Post today that Roche is considered far more likely to give supplies, adequate supplies, to public health authorities because of Chuck Schumer's threat. So there's politics, there's health, there's science here, and there are your concerns. Just give us a call, 877-528-TALK. 877-528-8255. We'll be right back with my guest, Dr. Gil Smolin, right after these messages.
When you're weary,
in times of trouble, in times of crisis, the American Red Cross is there, providing shelter, a warm meal, a helping hand. Victims of disasters need your help now. Your support for the American Red Cross Disaster Relief Fund makes help possible. Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org today.
Over troubled water, I will lay me down.
Tired of losing in the casinos and being in the hole? Learn how to win at Blackjack with Blackjack for Winners. Call 1-800-214-7012, 1-800-214-7012. This is the DVD the casinos do not want you to see. According to Tommy Hyland, a legendary Blackjack professional, this DVD teaches an easy way to count cards and beat the casinos at their own game of Blackjack. It takes only three easy steps. One, basic strategy. Two, card counting. And three, money management. It's just that easy to beat the casinos at their own game of blackjack. Order right now and you'll receive two instructional DVDs, 52 flashcards making basic strategy a snap, and a reference card you can take into the casinos with you. All of this for only $29.95 plus shipping and handling. Order today today at 1-800-214-7012. 1-800-214-7012. Start learning to win at Blackjack today with Blackjack for Winners. 1-800-214-7012. 1-800-214-7012.
Hey, where were you last year?
What happened to your hair?
Are you contagious? How come you're always tired?
If you think going back to school is tough for an 8-year-old, imagine doing it while recovering from cancer. CureSearch.org is a website that can help. It connects you to the doctors and scientists whose collaborative research has turned childhood cancer from a nearly incurable disease to one with an overall cure rate of 78%. CureSearch.org. You're not as alone as you feel. Brought to you by CureSearch and the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing the avian flu. And if you want to call in and discuss the science or the politics of this, you just pick up the phone and dial 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255, or you can comment on the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. My guest is Dr. Gil Smolin. He's a clinical professor at the University of California Medical School in San Francisco and the author of a medical thriller called The Reign of the Rat. Dr. Smolin, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Nice to be here, Mark.
Let me start with, I guess, the fear. You have the World Health Organization, the Center for Disease Control, saying that deaths worldwide could be in the millions. You even have a Russian scientist saying it could be up to a billion with 700,000 deaths in the United States. That sounds like fear tactics. Can it really be that high?
Well, there's a WHO official that said there might be 150 million deaths, and I would say that's probably an extreme figure, but this particular avian flu is simulating the Spanish flu that struck in 1918, and we had about 2 billion people then, and 50 million people died. We now have close to 8 billion people, and so if it's comparable, there could be large, great numbers of people dying around the world from this pandemic.
Well, then I think the question is, for all my listeners, is it comparable? As a scientist, I mean, is this flu as dangerous as the Spanish flu of 1918?
Well, it's a very interesting question. I would say there's no absolute answer to that, but I would tell you the following. They just discovered about a week ago, they reconstructed the Spanish flu, and they found out it was a bird flu that converted and mutated into a flu that could spread from human to human. It was very similar to this particular flu that we see now. And this particular flu that we have now needs to genetically change or mutate just slightly so that it would be able to be transmitted from human to human. And what that does, it will actually be deadlier. It could be deadlier than the Spanish flu of 1918. I'll tell you why. That Spanish flu, the mortality rate was 5%. So far, with very small numbers, this particular flu, when it affects humans, kills 50% of the people that are infected. So at the moment, this particular flu is deadlier when it goes into humans than the Spanish flu was, and that one killed 50 million people.
Well, that's a pretty scary statistic, and obviously we're even more mobile now around the world than we were in World War One. But let me give you a counter-argument. In World War One, of course, you had the massive trench warfare. You had people who were very ill lying in trenches next to healthy people. You had people, certainly massive movements all over the world that obviously exist today, but massive numbers of armies. Could that unique circumstance of World War One be a major cause of why the Spanish flu was so dangerous? And does that mean that we're a little safer today than we were then?
I don't think so, Mark. I'll tell you why. What you said is it's a very astute observation. Most of the deaths did occur in Europe, and most of the people, there was trench warfare, people's resistance was lowered, they weren't eating well, they were in crowded conditions, and naturally the disease, the influenza virus, which is highly contagious, spread throughout the troops. So you're absolutely right in that regard. But I have to tell you, it was a pandemic. pandemic. And it's true that the troops were very susceptible to disease, and many of our troops died from the flu. But it was happening in China. It was happening in South America. It was happening all over the world. And today, we have similar situations where we have people whose immune status is not very good. Think of all the people with AIDS who have depressed immune status. Can you imagine how susceptible they're going to be to a flu virus? And, you know, we talk about the elderly, we talk about children and all those things, but there's lots of people around the world, maybe not in the United States as much, but in Africa and other countries, that are going to be very, very susceptible to this virus.
Well, let me ask you this. We've had a lot of medical scares recently that, thank God, have not panned out. The ones I'm thinking of are SARS, the Ebola virus, mad cow disease. Is there a reason to suspect that this will be different from these other more modern examples of diseases that really scared us, but thankfully did not kill that many?
Some of those, the press really took it and ran with it, and it wasn't the scientific community that were alarmed by West Nile or SARS. I mean, there are only like 8,000 cases in the world of SARS. SARS is not highly contagious. West Nile is not highly contagious. The flu is. I mean, we know every season, every winter, there's just tremendous numbers of people who get the flu, but the usual flu has about 0.5% mortality. So we don't think about it, but you know, last year some 30,000 people died in the United States from the flu.
30,000.
Yes.
In the United States last year.
Yes.
And that's a typical year.
Yes.
And they're mostly, I guess, the elderly, the infirm, those with lower
right.
immune systems.
Right. That's exactly correct. So it does occur. It does have a mortality associated with the usual flu. This one, at the moment, is much more deadly. Now, there are some bright spots, not tremendously bright. I mean, not overwhelmingly brilliant, but there are some bright spots. And I would say one is whenever the bird flu has mutated to go into human form, it became less deadly. So there's hope that this bird flu that now has a 50% mortality when it affects humans that are in close contact with the birds, when it changes into a new virus that now can spread from human to human, the hope is that it'll be much less deadly than it is now.
Well, Dr. Smolin, I wonder, because in the case of AIDS, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, the scientists believe that that is a disease that came from primates, from monkeys,
right.
or in fact, I think there's I forget what you'll know the name. It's a SIDS, I think it's called a simian immunity deficiency syndrome.
Right.
Is AIDS more dangerous to humans than it was to monkeys, or less? And do we have anything to learn from that example of an animal transmission in the avian flu example?
Well, I would say the comparable part is that of certain virus or bacteria could be in one animal species and transmit to another animal species that's in intimate contact, and it can have different manifestations. In other words, it could be deadlier or less deadly. The Ebola came from primates as well, and it was very deadly in the humans that contracted it. There's another virus called Marburg that just broke out this last spring in Angola, and that was from animals.
Deadly or less deadly. It just depends
yes.
on the disease.
Yes,
fair enough.
It's variable. It could be either way.
We have to take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk about some of the more bright spots, now that I've scared you all, and talk about a specific vaccine called Tamiflu by the Roche Pharmaceuticals that has, I think, some optimism associated with it, but there's also some politics with it. We'll get to that and your calls at 877-528-8255 right after this.
Do you sell dietary supplements? If so, you may know that the Food and Drug Administration and the Federal Trade Commission regulate your sales presentations. Violation of the federal rules can lead to stiff penalties. You really must know the law. Fortunately, help is just a phone call away. Law Talk Incorporated has produced a CD series, 4-CD interviews with renowned attorney Jonathan W. E. Mord that explain the legal limits on sales presentations. The CD series guides you through FDA and FTC regulation, explaining the law that governs sales presentations, website content, and health claims, as well as global restrictions on supplement sales. This is a must-buy for network marketers and supplement companies alike. To obtain this CD series, call 1-888-RU-FREE-1. 1-888-RU-FREE-1. That's 1-888-783-7331. Call today.
Bad breath stinks. Nobody wants to have it, and nobody wants to smell it. It's an embarrassing clinical condition that can dramatically ruin the quality of your life. I'm Dr. Harold Katz, founder of the California Breath Clinics. I've smelled more bad breath than any other doctor on this planet. I've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you to conquer bad breath, sour, bitter taste, and dry mouth with my TheraBreath products. My book, The Bad Breath Bible, is the number one reference on this misdiagnosed disorder. Whether you're worried about occasional bad breath from garlic and onions, or if you have chronic halitosis due to diabetes, tonsils, or alcohol-based mouthwash, The Bad Breath Bible has a solution for you. The truth is you can't smell your own breath, so you never know if you're offending someone. That's why everyone needs to read it.
Call for your free copy of The Bad Breath Bible while supplies last. You'll also receive free TheraBreath samples, an amazing line of products that completely eliminates bad breath. Call for your free samples now. 800-517-9885. 800-517-9885. That's 800-517-9885.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing the avian flu, the possibility of a pandemic, with my guest, Dr. Gil Smolin, clinical professor at the University of California Medical School in San Francisco, and author of the medical thriller, The Reign of the Rat. Dr. Smolin, you gave us some very scary possibilities prior to the break. Maybe now you can give us a little bit of hope. I've read that there's a treatment, I don't know if it's a treatment or maybe it's a vaccine, Tamiflu by Roche Pharmaceuticals, that scientists expect, although it hasn't mutated to humans yet, but expects may provide some hope. Can you tell us about that?
Well, Tamiflu is actually an antiviral medicine. It's similar to an antibiotic, but it works against viruses. There are actually four, amantadine, ramantadine, Relenza, and Tamiflu. And the bird flu is now resistant to two of them, and the third one is not being produced in large amounts. So Tamiflu is an antiviral medicine, and actually can be used for other types of flu, too. But at the moment, the United States has stocked up about 1% of what it needs for the population. So we're tremendously deficient in the amount of Tamiflu that's available.
But now,
been slightly negligent in storing it up.
When you say the virus is resistant, my understanding is mostly it's not, that there has been a strain that is resistant, but most of the avian flu is not resistant to it?
No. The avian flu, most of the avian flu, if not all of the avian flu, is resistant to two of the four antiviral medicines.
Okay, but not Tamiflu.
Tamiflu is
still works.
The avian flu is still sensitive to Tamiflu.
Got it. Now, you say we have about 1% of the stockpiles necessary.
Right.
My understanding is that Tamiflu is made by a company called Roche Pharmaceuticals in Switzerland. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, could they provide sufficient quantities to help the U.S. population, and is that a possibility to do so?
No, they cannot. There's no way that they can produce enough Tamiflu to protect us this year or next from this potential spread of a pandemic.
Yeah. Now,
We've been a little negligent in actually requesting the medication from Roche, and so there are a number of countries that are ahead of us in the line waiting for this Tamiflu. And the good news is that just recently, I think today, in fact, Roche said they would consider allowing other companies to produce Tamiflu because they know there's no way they can produce enough to take care of the disease process.
What's interesting to me, Dr. Smolin, and I do focus on politics in Washington, is that came only after Senator Chuck Schumer, a Democrat of New York, said that if Roche didn't agree to in effect release its patent rights and to allow other companies to produce the medication, in 1 month he was going to file a bill to force them to do so. Do you support a legislation like that to require, in cases of a severe pandemic, forcing a pharmaceutical company to to allow other companies to produce the medicine?
You know, there's laws called orphan drug laws, where the government subsidizes companies to produce medicines that they know will not be financially rewarding. And so I think it's the government's job to protect its citizens. And possibly one of the ways of doing that is to put pressure on a company like Roche to allow others to produce the medication. So I don't know if a bill is necessary. Maybe it is. But I think it was appropriate to put pressure on Roche, since they cannot produce enough medication, to allow other companies to do the same.
Dr. Smolin, I agree with you. We have to take another break. When we come back, I want to explore a little bit more about the politics that led us to this sort of unpreparedness, and also take your calls. 877-528-TALK. We'll be right back after this.
This is Newsbreak. The National Hurricane Center says Hurricane Wilma is a perplexing storm. Three computer projections have it taking three different paths over the next few days. Two of them would have Wilma hitting Florida. One does not. Saddam Hussein's mass murder trial began today in Baghdad. He pleaded not guilty. The trial was postponed until November 28. A Texas judge has issued an arrest warrant for Congressman Tom DeLay. He's accused of funneling corporate donations through the Republican National Committee to state candidates in Texas. Stocks rallied on Wall Street. The Dow rose 129 points to 10,414. NASDAQ climbed 35 points to 2091. Senate confirmation hearings for Supreme Court begin November 7th. President Bush meets tomorrow in the White House with Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas. There's more news at usaradio.com.
Hillshire Farm knows it's hard to get convenience and satisfaction in one meal.
Microwaves heat food by exciting its water molecules.
Really? Ugh, what is it, chicken?
It was.
Got a little overexcited, huh?
Yeah.
Instead, try something right from the farm. Hillshire Farm. Ultra-thin deli select honey ham. Or combos like turkey and provolone. Packed in Gladware to help keep the deli fresh taste fresh. Hillshire Farm Deli Select. Farm goodness, everyday life.
John here. I'm running late. Construction at the tunnel.
The road to your business meeting is filled with obstacles.
Me again. I'm stuck on second. Yeah, nice parade.
Why not web conference with Microsoft Office Live Meeting and have productive meetings without leaving the office? Present to clients around the globe, collaborate in real time, even get instant feedback by taking a live poll. Try it free for 14 days at Microsoft.com/get live. That's Microsoft.com/get live or call 1-877-MEET-WEB today.
It's going to be a...
I'm Terry Graydon with our daily update from the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network.
High blood pressure has been called the silent killer. It's a risk factor for kidney disease, stroke, and heart conditions. But will your blood pressure creep up over the years? New research from Framingham, Massachusetts suggests that the answer for most middle-aged people is yes. A study in the Journal of the American Medical Association shows that Americans in their mid-50s face a 90% risk of developing high blood pressure during the remaining years of their lives.
A different study in the Archives of Internal Medicine suggests that doctors are not as aggressive in treating high blood pressure as they might be. Patients who had documented hypertension for at least 6 months were undertreated, even though their doctors were familiar with clinical guidelines. Losing weight, exercising, learning to relax, eating plenty of vegetables and fruits, and cutting sodium can all help control blood pressure.
This is Joe Graydon and the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing the avian flu, what it is, the danger of it, and what we can do to prevent it, both the medicine, the science, and the politics. And if you want to call in, all you have to do is dial 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255, or comment on the blog at radioinsidescoop.com. My guest is Dr. Gil Smolin, a clinical professor at the University of California Medical School in San Francisco and author of the medical thriller The Reign of the Rat. Let me go to the phones and Gordon in Michigan. Gordon, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Yeah, I have to ask the doc a few questions because I'm a skeptic.
Okay.
I've heard this these flu scares before. I mean, if it isn't one flu, it's another, and it always comes around the same time of the year. And, well, he seems to, you know, we seem to think this thing is so deadly. I'd like to know just how many humans have died from this. You said...
I think it's about 117.
There was a 50% mortality rate involved here, and but that was in the birds. It wasn't in the humans.
No, I think there's been about 100, a little over 100 deaths so far. Is that right, Dr. Smolin?
Well, there have been 120 people who have contracted the disease, and 60 died.
Okay, so right now the numbers worldwide are fairly small. How do you address Gordon's skepticism? I mean, we heard the Asian flu, I remember a few years back, was supposed to be really scary. How do you respond to Gordon, Dr. Smolin?
Well, this particular flu is very deadly in birds, as he was assuming. That's absolutely true, and it happens to be deadly in the humans that have come in contact with it. In China, they had to kill 150 million birds to try to prevent it from spreading, and most of them died from the disease itself. So it's a particularly virulent and deadly strain. That's why it's a little scarier.
And the scary thing, I guess, is not the bird-to-human contact, which I assume would only come among people living with wild animals like farmers and such, but the idea that it could mutate from human-to-human form, right? Isn't that what we're most fearing, Doctor?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And there's two ways that can happen. One is the virus itself can alter genetically slightly. There are only 10 genes in this virus. Humans have 25,000. So it's a very simple organism. And just a matter of changing one or two genes, and it can then mutate so that it can spread from human to human. The other way it could do that is if the bird flu affects an animal, let's say a pig, for example, and the human flu affects the animal at the same time, what happens is these two viruses join, and the copy and the offspring of this particular virus will have the characteristics of the bird flu and the characteristics of the human flu. So then, when that happens, it's called reassortment. When that happens, you have a virus now that has the deadliness of the bird flu at the moment and is capable of passing from human to human. And people think there's a very good likelihood that that will happen.
Well, what's a good likelihood? 20%? 50%? I mean, I it's very hard, I know, to put numbers on this, but is this a 1 in 100 chance of something we should really be afraid of, or is it
I don't know
more?
If I can give you a percentage, but I can tell you this. The head of the CDC, the head of the infectious disease at NIH, most of the respected scientists around the world believe that it will happen.
It will happen. It's likely. It's more than more than 50% likely to happen.
I would say it's likely to happen. It doesn't mean that it will happen 100%. It reminds me of these hurricanes that are coming in.
Right.
They have these plans.
Right.
They have the severity of the hurricane. They estimate what it's going to be.
Right.
The direction of the hurricane, they estimate what is going to happen. And we don't have control of it. Like, we don't have control of the hurricane.
Well,
Katrina was class 5 and hit head on to New Orleans.
Sure. Gordon, are you scared yet?
Well, you know, I still don't see why a 50% mortality rate in birds necessarily translates to a high mortality rate in humans.
No, it's 50% in humans.
Yeah, Gordon, my understanding is about 120 people, and that's fairly small right now, have contracted the disease from birds, and of those, half of them have died.
Oh, I see.
So the question is.
Okay, I'm scared.
the question is this. But my understanding is all 120 with maybe one exception, contracted the disease directly from the birds, that it has not yet, thank God, mutated into a human-to-human fashion, and that may never happen. Is that right, Doctor?
I would say that may never happen. I would say it's more likely that it will happen, and it's also likely that it won't be quite as deadly as it is now.
Well, Doctor, tell me this. Why do we have only 1% of the stockpiles necessary to treat Americans? Does this mistake go back, decades of our government not being ready, or does it have to do with protecting pharmaceutical patents? Why are we so unprepared?
You know, it's very interesting. When I started writing this book, Reign of the Rat, I actually predicted something of this nature to happen. And actually, it's not that unusual in nature to every so often have you call it even said, every so often there's a flu that, you know, people get scared about, it could be deadly and so on. That does happen. It happens periodically. Over the last 300 years, every 30 years, well, not every 30 years, but on an average of every 30 years, a deadly flu hits. So we had the Asian flu, we had the Hong Kong flu, we had the Spanish flu in the last century. And so when I wrote the book, I actually sort of predicted something like this was going to happen, and I discussed what we have to do about it and so on. And so it's not shocking that this is happening. And I say, why aren't we prepared? You know, Gordon's skepticism is similar to what the skepticism that they had in the government. They just didn't know where this flu was going to go and how deadly it's going to become. And I think they were a little slow in the take-up. And I think that, for example, England has 25% of the Tamiflu that they need for their population. And I just read today that they're making every effort to make it 50% or 60%.
Doctor, let me ask you this. You mentioned that 150 million birds, and this is fowl, right? This is chickens, and
right.
So when you say birds, it's not you know the hummingbirds or anything we see outside. It's chickens we're talking about, pretty much, right?
There are migratory birds that are also that the way it's spreading now most likely is with migratory birds,
As a seagull. I mean,
geese, different types of. I'm not an expert on different types of birds.
Okay, but birds that can fly from a continent to another continent.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. You mentioned 150 million birds were killed in China. I'm wondering if the condition of the birds is one of the reasons the disease is spreading. A lot of environmentalists, and in fact some vegetarians, and I am not one, but complain when they see that we have these sort of factories, killing factories, that instead of the way chickens used to be killed in farms, there'd be a few on each farm, and the farmer would kill them and take them to market, that you have these sort of processing plants where you have thousands and thousands of birds all in one room, standing in their own excrement, and it's not as clean as you might like it, and these close quarters help to spread disease. Do you think that the practice of killing chickens in Asia and possibly in America as well has helped to spread this disease?
I would say it certainly didn't cause the disease, but yes, the close quarters absolutely has enhanced the spread of the disease.
Scary stuff. We're going to take another break. The toll-free number is 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255. We'll be right back after this.
Do you dream of leaving your traditional 9-to-5 job, working whenever and wherever you want? Now it's possible to make your dream come true. In a moment, I'm going to give you a website that you'll want to visit to get started for free, joining over 7 million others just like you who've used this service. Just listen.
Last year I earned well over $150,000, and this year looks even better.
If you've ever dreamed of starting your own home business, you'll want to visit our website and do what thousands of others just like you are going to do today.
I only work 3 days a week, and I'm up to $4,000 a month.
Over 7 million people aren't wrong. You owe it to yourself to start living your dream. So log on to this website, 20cashpower.com. That's 20cashpower.com. And get started today. It's free. So go to 20cashpower.com and start living your dream. 20cashpower.com.
Is the IRS ruining your life? Are you afraid of losing everything? You can end the despair you feel right now. Get ready to write down an important phone number you're going to need to solve your IRS nightmare. The number is 800-827-7658.
Hello, I'm John Harris, president of J.K. Harris & Company, the nation's largest tax representation firm. IRS problems have a way of ruining every aspect of your life if you let them. Our former IRS agents and tax professionals have successfully negotiated settlements for thousands of our clients, saving them millions of dollars.
According to IRS statistics, the average settlement for accepted offers and compromise was between 12 and 15 cents per tax dollar owed, which means you could qualify to reduce your tax debt by as much as 85%. If you owe the IRS back taxes, call J.K. Harris at 800-827-7658. You may qualify to dramatically reduce your tax debt. Call 800-827-7658. That's 800-827-7658.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing the avian flu, the dangers of this deadly disease that now is transmitted from bird to human and hopefully, but will not be, but possibly quite could be transmitted from human to human. My guest is Dr. Gil Smolin, professor at University of California Medical School, San Francisco, and author of the medical thriller Reign of the Rat. You can call in at 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255, or you can comment on the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. I do have a comment on the blog from Jeff in Jersey, who points out that we've always been unprepared for flu, that certainly the Bush administration is to blame, but he points out that there was a GAO study back in 2000 during the Clinton administration that said we didn't have enough avian flu, and I think the implicit criticism is that I'm chiding Bush when I should be chiding the government in general. Jeff, let me respond, since I think that question is directed more at me, though I'll give Dr. Smolin a chance to speak as well, that certainly I'm not denying that this hasn't been a problem in the past, but I will talk about one political difference between the Clinton administration and the Bush administration. And I happen to know about this because it comes out of the AIDS crisis. In the AIDS crisis, you had exactly the same situation where you had pharmaceutical companies with patents on life-saving drugs. And advocates, in that case AIDS advocates, argued that where the drug simply isn't sufficient to treat the crisis, that you have to be able to break a patent in order to solve the health crisis, exactly what Chuck Schumer's bill would do. And at that time, Clinton actually worked with the World Trade Organization and developed a treaty to do exactly that. But Karl Rove took the United States out of that treaty before the World Trade Organization, this compulsory license treaty, and we're one of the few countries on the planet that believes that protecting the pharmaceutical companies is, I guess, more important than saving lives. Dr. Smolin, I don't know if you're aware of this World Trade Organization stuff. Did I get it right?
Well, no, I'm not exactly familiar with that, but I will tell you, I think the last year's problem was not related to politics, or maybe it was, but I'll say indirectly. Chiron Laboratories produces a vaccine in Liverpool, England, and their factory was found to be deficient. I think it was contamination and so on. And so we ran short of vaccine mainly because one of the companies producing the vaccine was not doing it adequately. And
but my understanding is that
the problem with producing the vaccine is different than the Tamiflu. Tamiflu is an antiviral.
So
the
Tamiflu
is a shot we take every year.
So Tamiflu would actually be a cure, not a vaccine. If you got the disease, Tamiflu would heal you. Is that right?
I would say of it as an antibiotic, like penicillin.
Right.
But
so that's
to
a cure rather than
viruses.
A vaccine.
Okay. The Tamiflu won't prevent you from getting the disease, but it'll decrease the severity and the length of the disease. And so the mortality will drop significantly in the population that takes Tamiflu.
I see.
So it's important to have that. The vaccine can actually prevent the disease. And every year people take flu shots and with the vaccine, and there are three companies that make the vaccine. And the problem with it is basically twofold. One is they lose money on it, the companies that make the vaccine. So they're not very anxious to make the vaccine. There used to be lots of companies doing it. They were losing money. It's down to three companies now.
Well, it sounds like
the second problem is that they can put their whole factory into production of vaccine and just direct their energy just to do that. And the disappointing thing, or the unfortunate thing, is that the virus keeps changing.
Right.
So the vaccine they produce today that works today may not work in 6 months.
But
and it's stuck with all this vaccine.
Is it fair to say that this is exactly the kind of thing that the free market doesn't do a good job, that capitalism doesn't do a good job, and that in this particular example, the flu vaccine I think is a classic example, the government needs to step in and provide it because as you said, unless there is some huge pandemic, the companies will lose money. Shouldn't this go to the government?
I think, very candidly, I think it's important that these companies somehow be subsidized. I don't know in what way. They have to be helped because there's a good possibility they're going to lose money making this.
Right.
And so they're not enthusiastic about producing large amounts of vaccine and find out it's useless after 6 months.
Right. So in my view, instead of subsidizing them, I think the government should produce it themselves or subcontract it so that we get enough vaccine for people.
We have to alter the present situation. I can tell you that.
One more thing, and then I know Gordon's been hanging on with another question, but what happened last year in England? I mean, did we rely too much, put all our eggs in one basket, this one English company? Did the government make a mistake there, or is it just that there's – I mean, how can we prevent what happened last year from happening again?
Well, we can't, in fact. And, in fact, Chiron this year said that they won't be producing the same amount of vaccine as they the amount of vaccine that they anticipated because of problems in the factory again. There are three companies that make it. One is a French company, Sanofi, and one is a British company, GlaxoSmithKline, and the third is the American company. It's the American company that keeps running into difficulties.
Well, let me go back to Gordon, who's been hanging on a long time. Gordon, I know you have another question.
Well, now I'm really afraid of vaccination.
Afraid of the vaccination? You mean?
Yeah, because vaccination basically introduces the virus into my system, and if this virus is mutating, and it's more marketably advantageous for pharmaceutical companies to treat the degree of mortality rather than try to stop the introduction of the virus, I'm thinking, well, gee, I don't know if they even want the vaccination.
Well, I think they give you a vaccine with a dead flu that can't mutate. Is that right, doctored rather than
Absolutely.
A live one? Okay, so a vaccine can't mutate to harm you. Is that fair? Or?
Right. The vaccine is safe.
Okay.
And,
so don't worry about the vaccine,
Gordon. A chicken product that's grown in, so it could be allergies or something, but the virus itself and the vaccine is dead, and you don't have to worry about contracting viral infection from the vaccine of the flu shot.
Okay, so that's an important point, Gordon. You don't need to worry about the vaccine.
So I can have my regular diet of sweet and sour seagull and not be afraid?
Well, yeah, what about the fear of actually eating birds? I mean, I eat chicken all the time. I don't know if Gordon wants to eat seagull, but should we fear eating meat? I guess if it's cooked, would that kill the virus?
Well, I would say if it's cooked very well, it would kill the virus, but I would be very anxious about eating any chickens that came from Asia.
How do we know? I mean, are our chickens
stamped?
I think
it's wise to assume that it's best not to eat any poultry that's coming from Asia at the moment. And I don't know if they import much, but I would say I think it's at the moment we have no evidence of the virus being in any fowl in the United States. And as far as how close it's come, I would say there's some reports in the birds in Romania, Turkey, and Greece, and, of course, Russia. But that's the closest, I think, they found.
Doctor, we have to take another break. But when we come back, I want to know if we're still importing these kinds of chickens and how can a consumer know to eat an American chicken. We'll be right back after this.
Is life moving too fast? If you're self-employed or a small business owner, you have no choice but to move as fast as you can. Sometimes you move so fast you don't take a close look at life's details. When was the last time you looked at your health insurance? If you don't have health insurance or if you have the wrong coverage, serious medical bills could mount up. That's where the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company comes in. We provide affordable health insurance for the self-employed and small business owners. If you don't have health insurance, call us. If you have coverage, call anyway. See if we can give you better coverage at a better price. Stay on track for affordable health insurance designed specifically for the self-employed and small business owners.
Call 877-735-6460. That's 877-735-6460. Home office located in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states and benefits may vary by state. Association membership may not be required to obtain insurance. Call 877-735-6460 for details.
Okay, go ahead.
I have something very
Sound it out.
Important.
Good.
To talk to dads about reading with your children. Most kids want to read. If you spend even a little time with them every night, it will help a lot. It will help What's this word?
Take each letter at a time.
Motivate.
Good job.
What's it mean?
Well, it means to encourage or, you know, help someone do something better.
Help motivate them to try harder, which can help them become better readers even faster.
Excellent.
When kids read better, it builds their confidence, and that can make a big difference in a kid's life while they grow up.
You're getting really good.
Thanks, Dad.
Keep going.
Reading with
For more ideas on how to be a better dad, call 1-800-790-DADS. This has been a message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council.
All right, what do you want to read next?
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We only have a few minutes left to discuss the avian flu with our really excellent guest, Dr. Gil Smolin, clinical professor at the University of California Medical School, San Francisco, and author of the medical thriller, Reign of the Rat. Dr. Smolin, I admit it, I am not a vegetarian. I do like chicken, and I eat a lot of it. Can I know when I go to buy chicken at my grocery store that it's American chicken and not Asian chicken? I mean, is that packaged that way? I don't even know when I buy chicken.
Well, I have to say I don't know myself, but I'll tell you a story that happened to me. I was honeymooning in Nepal with my wife near the Himalayas, and someone served us chicken, cooked chicken, and it was lukewarm. And I said to my wife, should we return the chicken because it's only lukewarm? And she said, no, she was embarrassed to do that. We don't want to be the ugly Americans. So we ate the lukewarm chicken, and we both got sick. And the moral of the story is, cook your chicken well, and if you do that, it's not as crucial as to where the chicken came from.
Well, luckily what you got sick with apparently wasn't the Asian flu, because you're doing okay.
No, that's true.
So let me ask you this. In terms of if the pandemic comes, one of the solutions, and it sounds like a really scary one to me, that the Bush administration is offering is a quarantine to actually take the people that are infected and somehow isolate them, or maybe even an entire city. Is that kind of thing even possible in today? I mean, how we have freedom of movement in America. Are you going to imprison these people?
You know, actually, in my novel, I discuss doing that, and that's one of the options that's available when you have a germ that you don't have any treatment for. That is to try to isolate people who have the disease from people who don't have the disease. And so, yes, I think that's going to have to be an option. If the other things happen, the virus stays deadly, we have no treatment for it, and it passes from human to human, quarantine, isolation, people staying at home, people avoiding going to movie theaters and crowded areas, just like they did with the polio epidemic in the 1950s, something like that's going to have to be done.
Well, that is a really scary thought. We only got a few minutes left. I do want to slightly switch topics. In the sense that there's a large discussion in American schools over whether or not to teach evolution. There are certain fundamentalist Christian groups that are saying we shouldn't teach evolution. It's not good science. And yet when I study, like what you do, infectious diseases, they're always talking about natural selection, about viruses becoming resistant, about, you know, how viruses mutate. Is it fair to say that the science of evolution is very important in your work?
I would say the science of evolution forms a basis for the scientific method that we employ.
I mean, natural selection, I mean, it may be some modifications on Darwin's theory, but in essence, it's Darwin's theory of natural selection that lets you prevent these kinds of diseases. Is that fair to say?
That's absolutely correct, and that's actually what happens when one bacteria fights off another bacteria, or the flu being deadly like this. These are incidences that I think are reflective of natural selection, actually.
Well, if that's not a plug for teaching evolution in American schools, I don't know what is. Doctor, we only have about 20 seconds left. What can you give us that's hopeful news in the midst of all this crisis?
Well, I would say maintaining good health, avoidance of areas that are risky and dangerous, getting Tamiflu medication if the flu comes to the United States, and trying to get a flu shot if you're in one of the more risky categories, and I think and a lot of prayer.
Well, and I'll add one more political thing, and that is to contact Senator Chuck Schumer of New York and to thank him for threatening Roche Pharmaceuticals with a bill if they don't provide subcontractors to provide that flu enough for Americans if that should happen. Dr. Gil Smolin, you've been an excellent guest. Thank you very much for coming here on The Inside Scoop.
Thank you, Mark. I enjoyed it.
Tomorrow we're going to...